This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
What we're seeing really is that it's children who are suffering the most. They're being, as I say, cut off from things like education, nutrition services, health services. Often they're arriving with absolutely nothing. And these are already some of the most vulnerable people in the country.
That's UNICEF's head of communication in Mozambique, Guy Taylor, who says tens of thousands of children have been displaced over the past month in Mozambique. Details coming up. Also, South Africa, already suffering debilitating electricity outages, is now enduring a water delivery crisis. And Zambia has received the first shipment of a new medicine to prevent HIV infection. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. On the first day of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, Secretary General Antonio Guterres urged an immediate humanitarian ceasefire and the immediate release of all hostages in Gaza, and reiterated a call for a cessation of hostilities in Sudan.
Today marks the start of the holy month of Ramadan, a period when Muslims around the world celebrate and spread the values of peace, reconciliation and solidarity. Yet, even though Ramadan has begun, the killing, bombing and bloodshed continue in Gaza.
Guterres noted that it's been 6 months since the Hamas attack on Israel and the subsequent ground invasion of Gaza by Israel. He appealed to both warring parties to honor the spirit of Ramadan by silencing the guns and removing all obstacles to ensure the delivery of life-saving aid at the speed and massive scale required. Guterres also called for the immediate release of all Israeli hostages and said the eyes of the world are watching. Turning to Sudan, the UN boss called again on the army and the paramilitary rapid support forces to stop fighting.
The fighting there must end for the sake of the Sudanese people who face hunger, horrors, and untold hardships. In Gaza, in Sudan, and beyond, it's time for peace. I call on political, religious, and community leaders everywhere to do everything in their power to make this holy period a time for empathy, action, and peace.
Sudan's paramilitary RSF group, which has been engaged in a brutal conflict with the country's army since April last year, agreed on Saturday to a call by the UN Security Council urging the two warring parties to cease hostilities during Ramadan. Earlier, the military supported a plea from Guterres on Thursday for a ceasefire during Ramadan. It is yet to be seen if the ceasefire will be honored. Amid the escalating violence in northern Mozambique, nearly 100,000 people, including some 60,000 children, have been displaced over the past month. Guy Taylor, UNICEF's chief of communication for the Southeast African nation, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam the attacks have forced more than 100 schools to close in Cabo Delgado and Nampula provinces, and many of the displaced children are at risk of violence and exploitation.
There has been sporadic violence and conflict in the north of Mozambique since around 2017, and this is the latest incident of that. And what we're seeing really is that it's children who are suffering the most. They're being, as I say, cut off from things like education, nutrition services, health services. Often they're arriving with absolutely nothing. And these are already some of the most vulnerable people in the country, if not the whole world, really, who are in very precarious circumstances.
Your staffers have seen some of these children on the ground. Can you describe what's going on with these children? I understand many of them have been separated by these attacks from their parents.
Yeah. What we're seeing is that children are really traumatized. They're having trouble coming to terms with what's happening to them. And as you said, in some cases, children have even become separated from their parents. So UNICEF is working very closely with our partners on the ground, with government, to try to reunite children with their parents as quickly as possible. We know that being separated from your family is obviously one of the most traumatic things that can happen to a child. And in cases where it's not possible to immediately reunite them, we're ensuring that they get care and the help they need, including mental health support and obviously food, shelter, access to basic services, while we try to reunite them with their families.
How many children have you documented of these kinds of cases where they've been separated and traumatized, obviously, that you're trying to help?
So far, we've recorded 182 cases where children have been separated from their families. We've managed to reunite about 57. So it's a very important part of the work that we're doing. We're continuing to work to reunite the rest, but we're also doing a lot of other things. We're working to ensure that populations have access to clean water, sanitation, that children can continue learning. We're setting up temporary learning spaces and making available teaching and learning materials. We're working to protect children from violence and make sure that in these very sort of difficult circumstances that they're safe, they have places to play, to be children, and to try and have some kind of sense of normality amongst the chaos.
Of these people that UNICEF is treating or helping, how many would you describe in severe acute malnutrition state?
Well, this is always a big risk, you know, because these people are already extremely vulnerable people, and they're people who already have quite high rates of malnutrition. We know that in Mozambique as a whole, I think the rate of stunting, which is when people are too short for their age, is around 38%. And there are many tens of thousands of children who are suffering from severe acute malnutrition. So amongst these populations, there's obviously a high prevalence of that. So what we're doing is we're working to screen children. That means take measurements, weigh them. And then when we discover or when we diagnose children with that severe acute malnutrition, we make sure they immediately get access to therapeutic food and treatment, which helps them to quickly put the weight back on and return to a state of health.
Are your staffers safe where they're located?
Well, there's always a risk, but we have strict protocols in place to ensure the safety of our staff to the greatest degree possible. But obviously, we're operating in a fairly dynamic and volatile situation, so there is always some element of risk involved.
Is there anything you want to mention about the situation that I've not asked you that you think it's important to?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say that I think the response is very overstretched here. But even before this current outbreak, Mozambique had a serious humanitarian situation with climate shocks, conflict, that violence that's been going on for many years now. We're really trying to meet the needs of these people, but the needs are really outweighing the capacity and the resources available to respond. So I think more support is urgently needed here.
That was Guy Taylor, UNICEF's Chief of Communication for Mozambique, speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam. South Africa, already suffering debilitating electricity outages, is now enduring a water delivery crisis. For the past few weeks, large parts of the country have been without tap water. Darren Taylor reports.
A heat wave and corresponding high demand for water. Those are two of the reasons given by government for the dry taps. But some water engineers say South Africa's always hot in summer, and the government has failed to upgrade infrastructure over the past two decades. They say corruption at municipalities also contributes to water supply problems. The governing African National Congress, the ANC, has acknowledged that corruption and mismanagement have contributed to South Africa's twin crises of electricity and water outages. Ntshavheni Mukwevho is spokesperson for the Department of Water Affairs.
The issue that we are experiencing currently, which started on Sunday last week, was as a result of power failure. Because of the time that it took to resolve the issue of the power, of course, the entire system that it supplies was empty by that time. To bring it back is quite a process.
Mukwevho explains that water departments cannot pump water when the electricity is off, so reservoirs run dry. Then, just when the reservoirs are filling, more power outages ensue, meaning the pumps stop working again. The Department of Water Director General, Sean Phillips, also says water services have not kept pace with population growth.
Demand has increased markedly together with increased leaks of water in the municipal distribution systems. We predicted that, and that's why we're building the Sutu Highlands Phase 2, which is a massive 40 billion rand project to increase the water supply into the integrated Vaal River system. Unfortunately, it's overdue and it will only start providing water in about 2029 or 2030. So what needs to be done in the meantime is that the municipalities need to fix the leaks in their distribution systems, and all of us need to use water more sparingly.
But many South Africans can't do this because they don't have any water at all. Dr. Feriel Adam is head of WaterCan, an advocacy group campaigning for the rights of communities to access water. She says she's witnessing great suffering because of government's inability to provide water. Even some hospitals are without water, says Adam, leaving patients at risk. The government sending water tankers into areas worst hit by water shortages. But Adam says there's not enough water to go around.
Not everyone can afford to go and buy water. And in addition, we need to make sure that we are not governed by water tanks. Talking about people who are elderly or even the poor health, carrying those buckets and buckets of water to and from the tank to your house, it shouldn't become the norm. It shouldn't be like, oh, there's a water issue, but we provided 30 tanks in your community. No.
For many South Africans, state-operated water tankers are now a common sight in their neighborhoods, with people forced to queue for hours in the heat to fill a few containers, and no end in sight to the crisis. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. 4 Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo has agreed to run for president again, despite being disqualified by a 20-year jail sentence. Gbagbo was the first former head of state to go on trial before the International Criminal Court in The Hague, where he was acquitted of crimes against humanity in 2019. The French news agency AFP reports that a statement by his party says he agrees to be the candidate of the African People's Party, Ivory Coast, following a central committee meeting. His party said it would hold an extraordinary congress to formalize the candidacy and would work to have Gbagbo's name added back to the electoral lists. Gbagbo lost 2010 elections to Alassane Ouattara but refused to step down. Bloody unrest followed, which saw French and UN military intervention. He was pardoned in 2022 by Ouattara, but not amnestied, and is currently ineligible to run for president next year. Zambia has received the first shipment of a new medicine to prevent HIV infection. The delivery makes Zambia only the second country in the world after the United States to offer this injectable preventative outside of a research setting. Katie Short reports from Lusaka, Zambia.
For 2 years, Precious Mbomboli took pills daily to prevent infection with HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, but the 21-year-old is among the first in Zambia to receive a new injectable prevention drug.
For 2 years...
She says she changed to the new injectable in late February because the pill was difficult for her. She used to forget to take it. Sometimes she was not home at the time when she was to take the medication. So she says the injection makes her feel better and confident. The new drug is known as Cabotea Gravia, long-acting. Each shot prevents infection for 6 months. Zambia is the first low- or middle-income country to offer the drug to the public. Lina Mwango is technical director of the local nonprofit Siheb Zambia.
Our target age group for this is adolescent girls and young women who are aged 16 to 24, as well as we're reaching out to their sexual partners.
Local representatives called Connectors are helping roll out the program. Joy Tapale is one.
The connector is based in the community. We do community mobilization. We do community sensitizations. We go on screen the girls that are eligible for DREAMS. Those that are eligible get to be enrolled.
The U.S. government has donated nearly 15,000 vials of the drug known as Cabotea Gravia. That's enough to protect 2,000 Zambians against HIV for 1 year, the U.S. embassy says. But experts say people who get the shot still need to take precautions. Kebi Musokotwane heads the Zambian National AIDS Council.
People get the injection and then they think it's a silver bullet, in that then they can go out and sleep around. And really the message here is that that's not why this drug has been brought on board. To realize that this drug does not prevent pregnancies, it doesn't prevent other sexually transmitted infections.
About 1.4 million Zambians are living with HIV, with about 33,000 new infections per year. Experts hope the new drug can help bring those numbers down. Kathy Short, VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
The global community has been commemorating International Women's Day and Women's History Month. One of Nigeria's few female senators, Ireti Kingibe, says she thinks it is possible, it is still possible, for more women to get into positions of leadership in her male-dominated nation. Our reporter spoke with her on some of her groundbreaking achievements and challenges since she assumed office.
Senator Ireti Kingibe is the second female senator to represent the Federal Capital Territory, or FCT, Abuja, in the upper chamber of Nigeria's parliament. She unseated an incumbent, Philip Aduda, who had held the capital for 12 years until the 2023 election. Senator Kingibe, who is known to be tenacious and strong-willed, noted that being a female legislator has not been easy.
It is getting better daily. I'm getting the hang of it. Myself and the other female senators were collaborating to get a lot more. And also, because I'm the sole senator for the Federal Capital Territory, that also makes it particularly difficult. I have a population of a little over 4 million people as one senatorial district.
Kingibe's political career began in 1990. In 2003, she was the Federal Capital Territory, or FCT, senatorial candidate for the All Nigeria People's Party. In 2015, she again ran for the senatorial seat under the All Progressives Congress. Her never-give-up spirit spurred her to contest for the Senate seat under the Labour Party a third time in 2023. She won it in a landslide. Before the election, Senator Kingibe had pledged that if she won, she would offer her basic salary to a special fund to tackle infrastructural deficits in the rural communities within Abuja. Recently, she assisted 2,000 indigent students in the Federal Capital Territory by paying for their joint admissions and matriculations board exams.
I started saving up my actual basic salary, as I told everybody I would, but my basic salary is so little, so I had to add allowances as well and look for source of funding. I know there are lots of indigent young people who actually would want to take that exam but cannot afford to. And I'm hoping that next year I can plan to do the same.
Senator Kingibe emphasizes that women are making significant contributions to Nigerian politics and governance despite male dominance. And she is urging women not to give up.
We can do so much more than we're doing as a people, and most especially women. I see what women do already with so little support. You can imagine what can happen when they're actually supported.
As a senator of the Federal Capital Territory, Kingibe has been working on legislation that will benefit women and girls. That includes a bill to give free maternal care to pregnant women in the Federal Capital Territory. She is also working on setting up a community watch group for young people in various wards in order to help them to observe and report crime to the proper authorities.
You see, young people, they are the inheritors of this society, and if we involve them, they have a lot to give. And so I'm trying to involve them in a lot of my programs. They're on my website. I tell them, you go there, sign up for the things you're interested in, and we will work together. We don't have to wait for government to do everything for us.
As for the theme of this year's Women's Day, invest in women accelerate progress. Senator Kingibe says women are the backbone of every economy, and investing in them will make a world of difference. For VOA News, from Abuja, Nigeria.
And in the world of sports, the Basketball Africa League Season 4 started over the weekend. My VOA colleague, Mokbili Abaro, has a recap. Let's take a listen.
Basketball Africa League Season 4 kicked off over the weekend with the Saturday games going in favor of the debutant teams. FUS de Rabat beats Petro de Luanda 82-73. Jonathan Jordan had a team high in points with 20 points. Alio Diarra added 15 points and 10 rebounds. This young man was selected for the all-offense and all-defense team for BAL Season 3. And for the second game on Saturday, Dynamo Basketball Club beats the Cape Town Tigers 86-73. Israel Otobo led the team with 21 points, and captain Brighton Hobbs added 20 points and 8 assists. Unfortunately for Dynamo Basketball Club, they forfeited their second game against FUS Rabat. The BAL statement said that Dynamo Basketball Club refused to comply with the league's rules governing jersey and uniform requirements. Hopefully, they can fix that and be ready for the remaining games because they played well in their opening game. Petro de Luanda bounces back from their first loss to beat the Cape Town Tigers 100-88. Leading the way for them was Carlos Moraes. The 38-year-old put up 17 points in the win. Action will be back on Tuesday, March 12th, with Dynamo playing Petro de Luanda in the first game and the Cape Town Tigers playing FUS de Rabat in the second game. You can catch more BAL content on our Nothing But Net podcast, as well as voaafrica.com and all of our socials at VOA Africa on Instagram and Facebook. I'm Mukbil Yabaro for VOA Africa in Washington.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Joe Gill, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.